You're listening to the Igniting Souls podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner, committed to helping you become a soul on fire.
Episode 108, Four Ways to Attract Better Clients and More of Them. How are you doing today? This is Carrie Oberbrunner of Igniting Souls, and I am thrilled to be here today. In fact, I don't know. There's just so much goodness going on, really. I want to give a quick shout out to our most recent reviewer. His name is Christopher Mays. I'll tell you why I'm excited about Christopher. He did a generous review, but this guy just wrote in and said he's creating a side hustle and he's creating life transformation through ebooks and blogging and all kinds of good stuff. So, Christopher, I'm proud of you. And I'm proud of every other listener here who not only listens, but who takes action. That's the whole reason I invest a lot of hours every week thinking, creating content, and then developing this podcast is for you, not for your listening pleasure, but for you to actually take action so that you can become a soul on fire. And I'll tell you what, people loved last episode, which was all about others. If you missed it, go back, check it out. But it was called 10 Trends of Rising Rockstars. And the craziest thing is I highlight you. I highlight 10 of my clients who are just doing amazing work. I like to brag about them. Why? Because I'm proud of them. Look, there's so much stuff going on in the world today that I am going to celebrate anyone who just lights a candle instead of curses the darkness. And you've come to the right spot because today we are talking about four ways to attract better clients and more of them. Does this work? Well, just one of our last rock stars I highlighted, Brian Wagner, shot me a message yesterday that said, hey, that one paying client that I just said I got is now five paying clients. So whether it's Christopher, whether it's Brian, whether it's anybody else, I'm convinced that if you take this content and apply it, if you haven't heard me teach the difference between Greek knowing and Hebrew knowing, Greek knowing is, I've heard that. Oh yeah, I know that because I've heard that. Hebrew knowing is, I know it because I'm living it. That's the difference. And that's you today. So whatever you hear today, take it, apply it, and report back to me. I'd love to hear what is happening in your world. I'd love to celebrate you. And today I'm going to, in classic Igniting Souls podcast style, this tends to be the template. I'm going to take a word and I'm going to give you whatever. Each letter is going to count as a teaching point. So today's word is give. And if you want to attract better clients and more of them, you need to give. In fact, in this business, in this online economy that we live in, the digital age, not the information age anymore, if you are not a giver, you are broke. You need to be a giver and you need to give your best away. And when you do, people say, what is going on? Why is this person given so much value? They're fantastic. I want to tell other people about them and I want to keep listening. I want to keep dialing in. So I'm going to give away a whole bunch of stuff today that normally people, when people hire me to do consulting or coaching, this is the type of stuff I give. Now, I can't work with you one-on-one in a podcast, but that's cool. That's cool. I know some of you will enjoy this. I just got a reach out from somebody on LinkedIn this week that said, love the content and excited to work together. So that's why you create content. You don't create content to say, ooh, I did a podcast, I wrote a blog post. Those are digital breadcrumbs, okay? Sorry, chewing on something. Those are digital breadcrumbs. And when you are creating digital breadcrumbs, if they don't lead anywhere, you have no money. You have no influence, impact, and income. So notice everything that I create is a digital breadcrumb that leads people, if they want, to a greater access point. Remember this quote, the more successful you become, the less accessible you are. And unless you have pathways for people to hire you or sample you or benefit from you or grow from you, you will burn out. You can never serve all the people in the world who need your help. You need pathways. And the more successful you become, if you don't have those pathways, you are on the fast path to burnout. But if you have different options like webinars or courses or conferences or whatever, speaker summit, if you have pathways, people can benefit. So let's get into the word give. And G stands for generosity. Okay, I'm teaching four ways to attract better clients, and then I'm going to give you a massive gift at the end. I don't even know if I'm supposed to give you this gift. Seriously, I hope it's okay. But I'm going to give you a gift at the end that illustrates what I'm teaching today. Give, right? So the first letter is G, and it's generosity. Generosity is how to attract better clients and more of them. What's the opposite of generosity? I don't know. Greediness. Do people want to be around greedy people? No. Do people want to retweet, like, share greedy people? No. Subtly, other people want to kick a greedy person on their way down. Subtly, people wish for the demise of a greedy person. Everybody wants to celebrate a generous person, but very few people want to celebrate a greedy person. Why? Because they're greedy. They don't give anything. It's all about them. So if you say, well, Carrie, I'm not attracting anybody, ask yourself, when's the last time I gave something away that was really valuable? And in the age that we're talking about right now of information products, digital age, content creation, thought leadership, ask yourself, when's the last time you created something and gave it away? This could be a PDF. Don't overthink it. This could be a PDF. It could be a Facebook live stream. Whatever form or fashion you want to deliver it in, I don't care. But I'm saying, when's the last time you gave something away? And if you say, well, Carrie, I'm not attracting anybody. Maybe because you're not giving anything away. I basically shared last week, without mentioning any names, I shared some unsuccessful strategies for promoting yourself on social media as a coach. What do I mean by that? Someone posting a picture of themselves and saying, hey, I'm becoming a coach. Hey, I started my coaching business. Hey, PM me if you're interested. That's not giving anything away. That is not a strategy to win with good clients and more of them. That is a way to say that, and by the way, sponsoring the post. Who cares if you sponsor a post like that? Nobody wants to see my bald head sitting behind a desk saying, I'm a coach, PM me if you're interested. I've done nothing for that person. That's like saying, let's put a Lamborghini on social media and put sponsored post and say, available now. No, what do Lamborghini dealerships, and not because I'm a Lamborghini, trust me, but what do dealerships do? They get people to what? Test drive it. That's what you're doing when you are generous, the first letter for the day. You are giving people the option of test driving you. That's what a podcast is. That's what a blog is. That's what a Facebook live stream is. That's what a tweet is. You are saying to the world, test drive what I'm giving. And by the way, a lot of times people need to test drive you a lot before they buy from you. They do. Maybe the time wasn't right. Maybe they didn't have the income. Maybe they didn't have the problem yet. It's okay. It's not just one and done. This is a culture, a habit, a style, a personality trait of being generous. Number two, initiative. Initiative. Why does Brian now have five paying clients? And trust me, a lot more coming. Because he's taken initiation. He's taken initiative. Not initiation, but he's taken initiative. And by the way, I don't edit this thing. Why do I edit this thing all up and crazy and present some perfect, polished podcast to you? Seriously, why? It takes more time. It's less believable. Some of the mess-ups I have are hilarious. Not for you, but for me. So the point is this. Stop trying to be perfect. Take initiative like Brian did. Brian, I'm sure, got it wrong a bunch. He basically has called 36 people, but he's set up complimentary coaching sessions, and a lot of these have converted into paying clients. So you need to take initiative. That is why I do the Igniting Souls Fellowship. It's free. Tons of people tune in. Many people don't buy, but I love it. It's content out there, and people will come back all the time and say, you know what? I came to that fellowship and 3 months ago and whatever. I came back the next three times and I love it. I'm ready. I want to know about this Igniting Souls Tribe thing. I want to take the next step. And we have all kinds of steps and paths for people to get moving along on that way. Take initiative. Letter V. This is going to be short because the gift's long. Okay, so I'm going to go through this quick. G is generosity or generous. Let's just say generous. I is initiative. V is victor. Look, if you are attracting bad clients, victim-like clients, maybe it's because you're a victim. Let me be the first one to say, maybe it's because you are a victim. We don't get what we want. We get who we are. We attract like people. If you want to attract people who are whining, complaining, negative, toxic, I'm not saying that's you. I'm not. I'm literally not saying that's you. Why? Because my favorite teacher attracted some pretty rough people, right? He attracted some prostitutes, some tax collectors, people who are not the type of people that we would like on the peripheral, on the outside. But who were those people on the inside? They were people who were teachable. They were people who were hungry. They were people who were excited. They were people who were committed. See? And what do? They gave their lives for the cause. I mean, they were unbelievable people. Now, he did pull in some rich people at times, right? He pulled in some powerful people at times. But the point is this. You want to attract not demographics, but psychographics. Demographics are who people are, right? Skin color, education, gender, generational, age-wise, that whole thing. That's fine. If you're really that gung-ho on attracting demographics, go for it. And I know people do that. I go after psychographics. Why? Because psychographics are motivations. Demographics, who? Psychographics, what? And I'd rather go after psychographics, people who are hungry to grow, people who are excited to learn, people who are souls on fire, people who want clarity, people who want engagement. These are the things I go after. I don't care if they're 85 or 8. Now, you might say, well, Carrie, I don't see you speaking all the time to high schoolers. No, I don't. Why? I don't know. Why not? Do I speak to high schoolers once in a while? Sure. Are high schoolers lining up to buy my books and products? Not normally. But the point is this. We have some high schoolers in our tribe. We don't distinguish and say, well, you know, you don't qualify, so get to the back of the line. I'll take anybody who's hungry, who's a victor. Victors, again, put their oar in their water and move forward. Ownership, accountability, and responsibility. Victims lie in bed, blame excuses, and denial. Which frequency are you giving off? That is the real question. If you're not liking the people you're attracting, if they're extremely high maintenance, extremely helpless, extremely dependent, whatever. I'm not saying that we don't all come with issues. We do, absolutely. Last time I checked, none of us are perfect. But the point is this, you want people who are on a trajectory of growth. That's who you're going after. A growth trajectory where they're bigger and they're better than they were a month ago. They're a bigger person. They're a better person because they've taken steps to grow. How do you test these? Sometimes people ask me, how do you test if someone's ready to grow? Give them a small assignment. Hey, I got this article. I thought it was really helpful based on your question. Go ahead and read it and shoot me back an email with one sentence of application. Crickets. If you hear crickets, probably not a good client. Probably keep moving forward. Probably don't waste your time. If they respond back quickly, like 24 hours later, loved it. In fact, here's the lesson I learned and I applied it. That's someone you want to pay attention to. Those are the people who are the outliers. And letter E, enthusiasm. I'm telling you what, it's one of my favorite words of 2017, entheos, God within, enthusiasm. I'm big on enthusiasm. I'm big on you bringing the culture that you want to create in other people. You need to bring it. If you're not excited, why would people stop and listen? I'm not saying you got to jump on buildings or off buildings or whatever. I'm just saying that you need to be enthusiastic. I woke up today extremely excited. Why? Because I get to add value to people. I've already done a Facebook live stream. I've already worked out. I've already spent time with my kids, basically reviewing their assignments for the day, connected with my wife, helping her with her business that she's starting, which, by the way, I'm going to be sharing about that in the near future. I've learned all kinds of lessons now because I started my business quite a long time ago. We're talking in, 2003 is when I formed the LLC, I believe. So we're talking quite a few years. But as I've been out on the front end of that, all kinds of lessons that I'm going to be sharing about Kelly's new entrepreneurial adventure. And her website is clearwatercounselinggroup.com. She's been doing counseling for 17 years professionally. But the cool thing is that she's going off on her own for the first time ever. Why? It's the best time. This is the best time for entrepreneurs ever in history, ever. You have access to more people ever. I mean, the tools we have. Do you realize when I formed my business, I needed to sign a form at the bank if I was going to swipe credit cards with a big old clunky thing as big as a briefcase? I mean, today you pop in a little chip the size of a quarter, your square and your headphone jack, and you're good to go. No startup fees. I mean, this is unbelievable what we have today. If you're not enthusiastic today, what's going on, man? Get a pulse, right? Go out and get some fresh air. Make it happen. But here's the point. These are the four ways to attract better clients and more of them. I promised it would be short, and it is. Why? Because I want to emulate what I'm teaching. I want to be generous. I want to take initiative. I want to be a victor. I want to have some enthusiasm. And so I've had a lot of people write in and say, you know what, I really liked Elixir Project, the book, but I listened to the audiobook and it's unbelievable. It's just so different. And it is different. It's very, very different because it is, I don't know, it's a drama. I mean, it is literally drama playing out with different voices and stuff in your ears. I mean, it's crazy. Heather did a brilliant job. But here's the point. Here's what I'm going to do today for you guys. Don't miss this either, please, because there's this subtle lesson. I still have people on Facebook just yesterday write in. They commented on a blog post that's floating around on Facebook. It's called something about why you don't need a big audience to get started as a writer, something like that. And this hater jumped on and was like, you know, this guy, Cary, they basically said, this guy, Cary, and I'm recalling it from memory, it's something like this. He spent all of his time doing how-to books, the fiction. He doesn't even know how to do fiction or help fiction writers turn it into income, blah, 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 and whatever. You're going to get haters. I don't delete the comment. And one of my team members hid the comment. God bless her. I'm so glad she did that. That's great. I unhid the comment. Why? Because let's have it come. I mean, let's have the criticism come. Seriously. Criticism is fantastic. It means that you're making an impression. So if somebody's been criticizing you lately, that's okay. Like, it's really okay. Look for the truth in the critique. By the way, there's an old podcast that I did called Four Ways to Respond to Your Haters or something like that. Go listen to that. There's great stuff in there. But here's the bigger point. The nugget that I want you to catch is I'm giving you a lot of Elixir Project audiobook away in this podcast for free. Why? Here's why. A couple things. Number one, I believe that it's going to be something unique for you. Many, many people that listen to this podcast that are part of our community, they don't read young adult fiction. And I don't. Like, I hadn't read young adult fiction ever before I did this book. Here's why I want to gift it to you. Number one, I think as you capture a new medium, you will get stretched. You will get stretched. When I go to a new restaurant and get new dish, when I take a new way home, when I go to a new type of event I never would normally go to, the learning that happens is unbelievable. This is why kids go on a fast track to learn, because everything is new to them. Us adults, we get stuck in ruts. We plateau, we stagnate, we get stuck. And the reason why is because we always do the same old restaurant, same old type of genre of books, same events, same seat. Some of you go to a weekly event and you sit in the same seat. Now, I get it. We're all guilty. I get it. But come on now. You got to rock the boat. Why? It reminds you that you are alive. So even my parents who never listened to an audiobook, oh my gosh, I had to take my dad quite down the tech trip of how to get an Audible app on his phone and all this stuff. My mom's a little bit faster at all this stuff, but I love them to death. It's great. No worries, mom and dad. Love you both. But here's the point. When you get outside your box, new awareness comes into you. Literally, your brain is creating new neuropathways called neuroplasticity. And neuroplasticity is something that continues as you age. It's not just for young people. That's what they thought for years. So number one, your neuroplasticity is going to go through the roof as you listen to this podcast. Number two, you're going to see how I take a fiction story that's 100% fiction and how I turned it into literally an enterprise that has live events, it has a course, it has all kinds of different products and services built around it. This is a teaching point for you. Why? Because you probably have a skill set, an expertise that you never thought you could monetize. I mean, seriously, I meet people all the time who are brilliant. They are brilliant at what they do. God has given them an amazing gift, but they've never even thought about how to monetize this to increase their influence, impact, and income. That's another reason why I want you to listen to this. So neuroplasticity, monetization, okay? And number three, the other reason why I want you to listen to this, here's the point. There are so much near future tech nuggets in there, like sci-fi tech. There's so much near future data that if you want to get a glimpse of where we are headed, you know, you think watching the news, that's just reporting what's happened. Okay, the news is just saying, here's what's going on presently. The best way for you to get ahead of the curve is to know what the near future is. So Elixir Project Audiobook is going to give you this glimpse into the near future, what's coming. So again, neuroplasticity, number one, I think that's really going to help you out. Number two, monetization. Your brain's going to be open up to see other ways that you can take your expertise into a new buyer's journey experience. And number three, near future. Near future. I got to jot all that down before I forget. But the point is this, enjoy it. Enjoy it, enjoy it. I'm giving away a large portion of it because I really want you to just fall in love with it. And Heather did a brilliant job. I mean, this girl got so many accents. It's unbelievable. So enjoy, enjoy. I'm modeling giving, generosity, initiative, victor, and enthusiasm. I'm just not teaching on it. See, that's another thing. Teachers teach. Come on. We're in the game, teachers. If you're a teacher, get in the game. Why? Because you need to. Everyone's sick of old professors who just teach and teach and teach and teach the same thing. Get in the field. I am in the field. I'm not just coaching people on stuff that worked years ago. I'm saying this is working today, or this didn't work yesterday. And it was a big failure, but I learned tons. So blessings to you. And if you know someone who needs this episode, share it with them. We need people who are better ministry leaders, business owners, entrepreneurs, moms, dads, students. We need more people who are attracting better clients and more of them. And if this episode has helped you, then share it with them. This is Carrie Oberbrunner. I'll see you next episode. Enjoy Elixir Project Audio.
Author Academy Elite presents Elixir Project. Written by Carrie Oberbrunner. Narrated by Heather Masters. Chapter 1.
Strip search 'em,
barks the senior TSA officer to his junior. Then he lowers his voice.
After last week's events, I'm not taking any chances.
The younger officer snaps up from his stool.
You heard him. You two, follow me,
he says, scowling at an attractive couple in their mid-20s. Both look innocent enough. What set the agents off? I'm not sure if his abrupt tone is meant to impress his superior or intimidate those of us waiting in line. Judging by our expressions, I don't think either strategy is working well for Mr. Mall Cop. You can't be serious, the woman says. I'm not going with you, and I'm definitely not getting naked. Her travel companion jumps in.
We're just tech professionals on our way to meet with a private client in London. Why the search?
They argue back and forth. Their growing resistance and escalating voices cause other officers to stop their check-in process. Pens freeze midway through verifying a long line of travelers anxious to get through security and one step closer to their anticipated destinations.
The other officers place their paperwork down and shuffle closer to the couple. Easygoing chit-chat among the passengers dissipates. Like a thin metal wire stretched taut, the patience in the room is dangerously close to snapping.
I think there's going to be a problem here,
Nick whispers to me, Darren, and Chloe. Yeah, Chloe says. This is starting to feel a little weird. The senior officer towers directly over the couple in front of us. He looks crusty and weathered, like old leather left out in the afternoon sun too long. His eyes bug out slightly, but oddly, they don't blink. He's close enough to smell, a musty odor, a mixture of cheap aftershave and wet dog. I read the lettering on his narrow tan name tag. Officer McNulty.
Don't give us that tech professional spiel,
the irritable officer hisses.
We know exactly who you are. We can either discuss details here or privately back in our control room.
At the words control room, I catch a glimmer in his eye, maybe even a wink. The woman's eyebrows narrow. I said, I'm not going anywhere with you. Her speech drips of a strength that I envy. Her associate maintains his poise too, but I'm near enough to see his fingers twitch nervously. I'm sure he's capable, but the officers outnumber him half a dozen to one. I want to look at my three friends instead. Maybe they know something I don't, but that would require turning from McNulty, and I'm not sure that's a good idea.
We have passports and papers,
the young businessman says, reaching in his pocket.
Stop, and keep your hands where we can see them. We know you're linked with a swarm sleeper cell here in the States.
Time stumbles and spins as I process his accusation. Swarm? Here? Now? A bead of perspiration trickles slowly down McNulty's face.
Did you say swarm?
A deep voice growls directly behind me. Something hard smacks my back. I turn to see a large, balding man shaking with rage. His face twists and contorts, seizure-like. Bright shades of red streak from the tops of his ears all the way down to his wide neck and the gold chain encircling it. Tufts of dark chest hair sprout out from his button-down Hawaiian shirt. He struggles to speak, as if someone has kidnapped his tongue.
Filthy pigs! You murdered my wife!
He lunges forward, flailing his arms and nearly knocking me over. The close quarters in this crowded line don't offer me much space, but Darren still has the presence of mind to react quickly. His arms catch me, gripping the small of my back, wrapping around my waist, and stopping me from a nasty fall on an unforgiving floor. Before I can gather my thoughts or my balance, another voice screams from behind us.
Hackers from hell! You ruined my family!
A petite soccer mom yells.
You stole my identity, our money, and our dreams!
Several others shout, voicing their disdain. Our once organized line pushes forward, mimicking a Black Friday crowd overly amped about doorbusters waiting on the other side.
Quit pushing,
an older man with a cane yells, trying to maintain his balance. Let security do their job, pleads a woman to my left. Without space to stop the force welling up behind us, bodies begin toppling forward like bowling pins smacked by a heavy ball. Anger mounts, the cane falls, and fists begin to fly in this supercharged, unforeseen escapade. Scrunching down as low as we can, Darren, Chloe, Nick, and I crawl to the right, hoping to avoid getting caught in the fray. I catch a glimpse of the large, balding man. Using his weight, he knocks over several more bystanders and army crawls toward the young professional, still lying on the ground, dazed by the commotion. The balding man sits on the chest of the alleged swarm member and pummels his face, bouncing his skull off the tile floor with each blow.
his arms pinned under the large man's weight. The businessman's only response is a series of high-pitched squawks. This barbaric scene rivals any mixed martial arts competition. I want to run for help. As much as I hate Swarm, he should be tried in court, not beaten to a pulp. Before I can move, a red dot appears on the balding man's back, and a second later I hear a loud crackling and clacking noise. Blue bolts of lightning dance between the two electrodes at the tip of the senior officer's gun. I watch as thousands of volts of current shoot through his body. The bald man screams and shakes and then goes stiff. Officer McNulty bellows in a deep voice,
"Freeze, everyone!"
Even the other officers stop trying to break up the fights all around them. The reprimand finds its mark, and silence soon replaces pandemonium. The crowd sheepishly settles down like elementary school kids caught misbehaving on the playground.
"Get an ambulance for Gramps here," he says.
Two other officers spring into action, helping the older man to his feet. Another recovers his cane, which got knocked away during the scuffle.
"What about the guy with the bloody face and his blonde friend?"
the junior officer asks.
"Better get them an ambulance too?"
"Not a chance,"
the older officer says, putting his gun back in its holster. His tone is emotionless. The junior officer doesn't pick up the cues.
"Yeah, but we're not even sure they're associated with the hacktivists."
The weight of the moment closes in on my chest. It looks like McNulty is going to turn his stun gun on his junior officer next. But instead, he tightens his lips and cranes his neck at an awkward angle.
"Take them anywhere other than our control room, and you can kiss your job goodbye."
He whips around and storms away, huffing as he marches. Heat flushes into the junior officer's cheeks. He straightens his belt, then issues a command of his own.
"You heard him. Call an ambulance for the old guy."
Then his voice drops.
"And take those two suspects into the control room."
"What should I do with them there?" a middle-aged female officer whispers. My friends and I are still close enough to hear her.
"You know what to do,"
he mutters.
"Dispose of them."
Chapter 2. None of us speak until we get through airport security and to our gate. From our seats, we can still see the officers, but at least they can't listen in. Darren breaks the silence.
"Did he say dispose of them?"
I didn't think much of Darren until we did a group project last semester. The girls in my dorm studied him more than the exams for their gen ed courses, often commenting about his wavy ash-brown hair. He is easy on the eyes, but I would never admit it to them, or him. Darren listens unlike anyone I've ever met. On the surface, some might chalk it up as shyness. While others bumble on about their opinions, Darren stops to ask for mine. After a couple of conversations, I discovered what's truly behind those brilliant brown eyes. Sincerity.
"I know," Chloe replies. "Think he was joking?"
"Hope not,"
Nick says.
"They have what's coming to them."
Although it was a callous comment, he does have a point. Most everybody I know has suffered at the hands of Swarm. Kai warned us about the potential for high alert during our trip, I point out.
"Should we still board our flight or head back to campus?"
Nick asks. He doesn't sound scared, just a little concerned. Nick isn't the type to get alarmed by officers in the airport or by opponents on the football field. He can thank his running back frame for that extra shot of confidence, muscles bulging out from all directions of his dark mahogany skin. I bet Officer McNulty wouldn't last 10 seconds against him, if he didn't have his stun gun to help him. It only counts as a whole semester's worth of credits,
Chloe reminds us. Besides, don't you think we owe it to Sienna's uncle after all the strings he pulled to get us this opportunity? Nick, Darren, and Chloe stare at me, waiting for my response. Sienna? Chloe says. What? I clear my throat before continuing. He insisted on hooking us up.
I'd say, Nick says, nodding. The plane tickets, hotels, and meals. Don't forget the details between the registrar and the Center for Global Engagement,
Darren adds.
First quantum mechanics major spending the summer abroad in Greece. Can't beat that.
The longer we talk, the better I feel. Conversation creates distance between the incident and us. Still, I wonder about the blonde woman. Did they succeed in transporting her to their control room? If so, she might be dead by now.
You boys pick your perks, Chloe teases. But I've enjoyed our smart rings the most.
I have to agree. Our smart rings are the coolest invention I've ever worn or seen. I can't live without mine now. But last October was a different matter. I've never enjoyed receiving gifts. I get anxious thinking about what reaction I'm supposed to have when I untie the bow. Most years, I forget about my birthday until the day it arrives. But this year, Uncle Kai wouldn't let me. Between those reminders, he dropped hints about an extra special gift he'd selected for my 18th birthday. He insisted on giving me matching ones for my friends to help us prep for our trip to Greece. Though he never listens to my pleas of going cold turkey on his gift-giving addiction, I can't help but appreciate his thoughtfulness. For as long as I can remember, Uncle Kai has been the steady presence in my life and the closest thing I have to a father. Or mother, for that matter. I glance around at the other gates. People stand relaxed, scrolling on their phones and sipping beverages. All signs of what happened only 15 minutes ago are gone. The junior officer still flexes his dominance, flitting about to various stations. From this distance, I can't make out what he's saying. His gestures seem overdone, like he enjoys playing the part of the main character in his own personal drama. I scan the faces of passengers filling the gate area. That swarm couple were going to be on our flight to London. I know Kai is probably busy this morning, but I should call him anyway. He'd want to know. When I was a toddler, my parents were in an accident. My lone memory of our former life together is captured in a family photograph from my third birthday. Uncle Kai told me the picture had been taken days before my parents were removed from me and from this life. Over the years, I've stared at the picture more than I care to admit. Guess I keep hoping to find the truth. Like, what really happened? The details surrounding their deaths have always felt conveniently cryptic in nature. 15 years later, unanswered questions still infiltrate my mind regularly. Heaven knows I've coexisted with ambiguity for far too long. A couple of years ago, I launched my own amateur investigation about my parents' accident via the internet. A junior in high school at the time, night after night, I followed every lead in a web of interrelated mouse clicks. But in the end, I failed to uncover an alternative besides the official pronouncement: an unfortunate accident. Don't get me wrong. I'm deeply indebted to Kai for adopting me. My father's kid brother wore his protector role well, given the circumstances. Inheriting a toddler overnight is a big responsibility for anyone, much less a single guy highly committed to his career. Growing up, I viewed Kai more like an older brother than an uncle or legal guardian. Still, I can't shake the unsettling sensation I have deep in my gut.
Something about my parents' accident screams non-accidental.
What do you like best about the ring, Sienna?
Darren asks, interrupting my thoughts. The ability to talk on it, I announce, trying to look engaged in the moment. I don't want him to think I'm distracted. Chloe calls my habit daydreaming. I call it a part-time job, staying afloat in my deluge of thoughts.
Agreed,
Nick says.
That feature saved all our butts last semester. No thanks to you, Chloe.
He gives Chloe a flirtatious jab with his elbow. The way I remember, you were the one getting distracted. Don't you know you can't watch a playoff game and ace quantum physics at the same time?
She's got a point, Darren says. They say multitasking decreases your IQ, producing the same effect as being stoned.
Chloe grins at Darren. She looks stunning as usual, despite the fact that we're in an airport and barely managed to escape a brawl. She has so much to be thankful for. Nick, her boyfriend, adores her, and her mom and dad love her. In a weak moment, I could let jealousy spring up and choke out the kindness I feel toward her. Lucky for me, Chloe's loyalty melts any ill will I'm tempted to entertain. Our friendship blossomed over the past couple of semesters. She was the first girl I met on campus, even before moving in. All thanks to the admissions office. They switched our welcome packets on accident. Feeling responsible, they gave me her phone number, and we ended up tracking each other down through text messages. After straightening the debacle, we chatted in the campus cafe for the remainder of the afternoon, talking about whatever popped into our heads, class schedules, embarrassing moments from high school, and how to avoid the freshman 15. To our surprise, later that day, admissions reassigned us as roommates. Not a common gesture at our college, I'm told. Kai had worked his magic at the admissions office. He'd waltzed into Ravenwood Hall and emerged 15 minutes later with a spring in his step.
Good news, ladies. Admissions owned its mistake and regrets the welcome packet mix-up. They've reassigned you as roommates and put you in an upperclassman dorm.
Wow, Mr. Lewis, Chloe remarked. You've got some serious pull here.
Please call me Kai, he corrected. I'm just happy you've got each other now. Sienna could use a friend like you.
Thanks, Uncle, I said. You think of everything, even picking my friends. I winked. Guess I'll keep you, Rumi. That is, if you still want me. Nick gets up from his chair.
You guys hungry?
He asks.
I saw they had some protein bars over there.
No, thanks, I respond. After that latte on the drive over, I'm good. If only it were true. Me, feeling good? This knot in my stomach isn't going to loosen until I talk to Kai. He always knows what to say. In the tech world, Kai became known as a phenom at a relatively young age. Selling your first startup while still in college tends to have that effect. He turned the heads of all the major players in the industry. No need to climb the corporate ladder when you can take the elevator straight to the top. His key roles at Elixir and on the senior board of Clarix, the governing entity for the global organization, come with plenty of perks.
Sienna, when was the last time you saw Kai?
Darren asks. I love the way Darren says my name. I could listen to him say it over and over. I try recalling his question, but I'm distracted again, focused more on his mouth than finding the correct answer. He's pretty busy with Elixir stuff. I guess they're putting the finishing touches on a new project. But I think we chatted Tuesday, in prep for our trip.
He's so lucky, striking the lottery by joining Elixir when he did,
Nick says, still hovering since nobody else wanted any food. Guess he gave up on those protein bars. Yeah, I'd give my left arm to work there, Chloe says. You know I'm counting on you getting me in there for my internship. Who said I could get you in? I tease. I'm on Kai all the time just to get my resume in front of the right people. Well, don't forget about your friends when the opportunity comes. Kai joined Elixir way back when it was still relatively unknown. About 5 years ago, it became more popular among those with a taste for technology and innovation. But with the release of their new swarm-fighting technology and recent stamp of approval from the League of Nations, Elixir crashed into the mainstream, definitely claiming the spot as the cool kid on the block. Which is it for you, Chloe? Revenge or career? Darren asks. What do you mean? She asks. Your motive for working at Elixir. Motive? What am I, on trial or something? She replies with an icy edge. It was just a question, I say. I don't think he meant anything by it. She stares blankly ahead. Tears well up in her eyes and start rolling down her cheeks and off her chin. I know the source of her sorrow because, as roommates, we often confide in each other. I even know things Chloe hasn't told Nick. I'm sure your secret is safe with Darren and Nick, I tell Chloe, trying to make it easier for her. I'm sorry, guys, she says. Swarm's a sore subject for me. No one speaks, because it doesn't feel like we're supposed to. You could say Swarm stole my high school best friend, Amy. Back then, I didn't know how Swarm tricks girls into the human trafficking industry. They go online and pretend to be a teenage guy. After establishing trust and chatting for a few days, they ask the girl to do something she'll regret. Nothing too big, but still something embarrassing. That's horrible, Darren says. It gets worse. They record it by hacking the webcam and then use it as blackmail, threatening to send it to her parents and classmates unless she continues down the regretful path. Each day they apply more pressure, upping the ante and demanding more. After weeks of torture, guilt, and self-hatred, victims will do anything to end this toxic cyber cycle. Swarm then offers an ultimatum. If she agrees to meet in person, they'll destroy the videos. If she doesn't, then they'll go public.
Sounds like hell,
Nick says, putting his hand on her arm. Nobody knew Amy was stuck until she didn't return home one weekend, she says, her voice cracking. After confiscating her computer, the authorities put together all the pieces. For all we know, Swarm is still using her in one of their trafficking rings in some dark corner of the world. Chloe wipes her tears with her hands. Nick leans in, giving her a comforting hug. I'd do anything to take out Swarm, she says.
Wouldn't we all?
Darren mumbles under his breath. Out of the corner of my eye, I spot the junior officer and his female colleague huddled around an electronic gadget, like a tablet or something. They both seem animated, maybe even upset. I turn back to my friends and look down at the new text on my ring, an alert about boarding beginning in 15 minutes. I remember when I first opened Kai's gift. I wasn't exactly sure what it was, so I simply stared at the box instead.
Come on, Sienna, he prodded. You don't even know what it is, do you?
Well, no. I blushed, but then I went on the offensive. It looks like a ring, but okay, Einstein, what is it? I picked up the simple silver band and turned it over in my hands, appreciating the sleek design.
Try it on.
I slipped the ring on my finger.
Cortex, call Kai, he said.
His phone rang on command.
Hello, birthday girl.
Kai's voice boomed through the ring with crystal clarity.
Shut up! It's a phone, too?
More than that,
Kai boasted with as much pride as a new dad showing off his baby's pictures.
Watch this. Cortex, play Sienna's favorite childhood movie.
The ring glowed softly, and then more intensely. A bright flash ripped through the silver circle. Above us, recognizable images were projected onto the flat white ceiling. The surround sound in his home office sprang to life, somehow integrated with the operating system. Kai spent the rest of the afternoon educating me on Cortex, the new smart ring he and his Elixir team had developed. The gift opened my mind to possibilities I never knew existed. Of course, it contained all the expected features: unlimited access to all things digital, an internal projector with built-in GPS, and Internet of Things integration. IoT connects you to everyone and everything, including your bank, your mechanic, and even your doctor. Think you might need to change a light bulb or replace the filter in your refrigerator? Cortex does most of it for you: the knowing, the buying, and the shipping. All done by instant drone delivery. What's this? I asked. A text informing me to drink a glass of water outside?
Oh, that's Prompt's technology, Kai replied. Your current level of hydration is low and your cortisol is high, hence the text message. You could use some water and sunlight.
Only in its infancy stage, Prompt influences brainwaves by suggesting new thought patterns. Beta testing found it extremely effective for overcoming addictions to substances such as heroin and nicotine. Parents sang its praises for aiding their children in replacing night terrors with sweet dreams. But isn't it a little dangerous? I asked, shifting my weight on Kai's dark brown leather sofa. I tucked both my feet up under my legs to get into a comfortable position.
Prompts? How so?
He rested his chin on his fist. Well? I fumbled, trying to form an educated objection. Thought-influencing technology sounds awfully similar to mind control. Isn't it risky?
Risky? Come on, Sienna. What newsfeed have you been scanning? Sure, we have our skeptics and haters, but think of all the good it can do.
Like what?
Well, in beta testing, Prompts increased academic scores, decreased anxiety, and raised our propensities for charitable giving. Plus, there are privacy settings you can enable. I set yours extremely high, so you have nothing to worry about.
He sat back in his chair and folded his arms. His blue eyes searched for a smile on my face. We both knew he had me. And although Kai often proves his point, it's my job to make him work for it.
Need more proof? Prompts also decreased violence in hostile environments and helped athletes shatter records in nearly every sport. And?
Kai stretched out his next statement for emphasis.
We need any edge over Swarm we can get. They're playing for keeps, remember?
I let silence have its place, filling the empty space between us. Okay, you've proved your point, I said. Prompts might be a breakthrough, but sometimes I worry about all of you at Elixir. You seem so busy creating, I wonder if you have time to evaluate what you're doing. There's a price for playing God, you know.
Well, anytime God wants to step in and stop Swarm, he can,
Kai replied.
In the meantime, we'll do our part.
Sienna, Earth to Sienna, Chloe says, tapping my shoulder. That's the third time I said your name. Someone's calling you. I snap out of my daydream. Tiny orange letters encircle my ring, revealing the identity of the caller. Why would Kai be calling me? Sorry, guys. I need to take this. I excuse myself a few feet away and accept the call. I thought you were on assignment with Elixir and... But before I even have a chance to finish, Kai interrupts me with unfamiliar urgency in his voice.
Sienna, whatever you do, don't get on that plane to London.
Chapter 3. What's wrong, Kai?
No time to explain.
Then he shoots off a series of directives.
Find a TV or use your ring. Swarm is in London. They did something to the royal family.
What are you talking about? When? 1,000 other thoughts hijack my mind.
They're dead. All of them.
Then in a somber tone, he warns,
This is the beginning, Sienna. Everything is about to change. Forever.
I don't recognize this person on the other end of the line. Kai has never been one for melodrama. He's the complete opposite. Forever the eternal optimist. He downplays negativity, sensationalism, and fear-based media. You're scaring me, Kai. Anxiety creeps up from the pit of my stomach, making it hard to swallow. Then our call drops, and he's gone. I take the ring away from my mouth and close my eyes. Darren, Chloe, and Nick stare back at me. You okay, Rumi? Chloe notices the fear plastered all over my face. She reaches for my hand. I clasp it and walk forward, pulling her with me, not once taking my eyes off the adjacent wall. We join a small group of travelers huddled around a public transparent projection screen. I gaze at shaky footage on the left side of the screen shot by a cameraman who appears to be running through a crowded street toward a river. The right side of the screen shows video from what looks like a mobile phone. Several cars with tinted windows speed down a city street, striking people and breaking through barriers. Chloe and I inch forward, hand in hand. Nick and Darren press in behind us. A reporter speaks.
A day that started out so perfectly will end tragically for billions across the planet. Historically, May 9th is known as Europe Day, a day dedicated to peace and unity. The Queen's 8 state limousines, 2 Bentleys, 3 Rolls-Royces, and 3 Daimlers departed at 11 a.m. 8 veteran chauffeurs, each extremely loyal to the royal family, transported European dignitaries from more than 2 dozen countries. Supporters lined the streets, waving flags, cheering, and greeting one another with shouts of peace in their native language. Around 11:30 a.m., the lead car with the royal family suddenly accelerated. Shortly after, the other 7 cars in the motorcade broke line and followed in reckless pursuit. Reaching speeds of more than 90 miles per hour, the vehicles plowed through bystanders and barriers, killing several people. The chase ended when the cars broke through a final barricade and drove straight into the River Thames. Calls made from the dignitaries in the vehicles are now being compiled by officials. Apparently, screams of being trapped in the cars and cries of doors and windows that wouldn't unlock pepper these voicemails. Witnesses say several dignitaries broke the windows, but because of high speeds, they were unable to jump out. The onboard cameras reveal chauffeurs who appear oblivious to the screaming and pleading of their passengers. Each driver looks physically present but mentally absent, not even panicked or aware of danger. Rescue attempts are being made as we speak by the emergency workers behind me. As of now, no bodies have been recovered. At the same time as this tragic accident, several large European government websites were hacked, each site went completely dark, except for the word swarm. We're left with more questions than answers. Was Swarm's attack retaliation for London's recent support to resurrect the League of Nations? One thing is for sure. This current attack is by far the most devastating and perplexing. Experts wonder if we've witnessed the first hack upon the human mind. Were these chauffeurs key players in a suicide mission they knew nothing about? If these suspicions are confirmed, then hacktivism has crossed a new echelon of evil, one that could infect us all. An official at Elixir, the international organization dedicated to swarm eradication, promised a formal response within the next 48 hours. Our correspondent believes Elixir may reveal some new technological advancement that will deliver a death blow to Swarm. Apparently, Elixir officials have been testing this technology for some time, and according to its spokesperson, Ms. Tilda Tulane, the world can't wait any longer. This is Laurie Wicker, reporting on site in London. Stay tuned for more updates, including coverage of Elixir's response.
A man to my right curses, and a lady to my left cries.
This is bad,
Nick says.
Really bad.
Chloe lets go of my hand. She turns to Nick, burying her head in his chest. He wraps his arms around her and holds her close. My eyes catch Darren's. Must be nice, finding comfort in the arms of another. But relationships never come easy to me. The price you pay for losing a mother and father you can't even remember. I'm not willing to drop my guard ever again if it means the possibility of loving and losing. Kai is the exception, probably because I was too young to know otherwise. A 3-year-old orphan needs love and affection no matter who they are. Research proves it. In my freshman psychology class, I learned about a study of infant deaths on 40 newborns. Despite getting all their physical needs met, over half died within the first 4 months. The single reason? Not being touched. Think we should still leave the country? I asked Darren, since Nick and Chloe seem a little preoccupied with each other.
Well, I don't think we should stay here.
He's right. The entire airport feels like a giant tinderbox ready to explode. No wonder Kai sounded flustered. Elixir is probably scrambling over how to respond. Dignitaries from across Europe might be dead, including the royal family. And Swarm is probably celebrating with champagne bottles in hand. All those lives gone with one single hack. But if Swarm can hack our minds and not just our devices, then we're all in danger. I want to run, but my feet feel heavy, like they're stuck in thick mud. My finger beeps again.
Sorry, think we got disconnected.
Kai says, I just saw the news. You okay? Was it Swarm? What's Elixir going to do? I fire off questions.
They didn't report even half of it. Look, I can't have you board that plane.
He sounds more relaxed this time, more like the Kai I know.
I'm worried about Swarm, so I've made some arrangements for you and your friends to get out of the airport safely.
Kai instructs.
In a couple of minutes, a guy in a uniform is going to come get you. Go with him. He's on our side.
Okay, we will. So I take it our summer in Greece is on hold? No connection flight to London means no.
Sienna, I need to run. We're making a big announcement in the next 48 hours.
Sure, go, I say. What's the name of the guy coming to get us?
Officer McNulty,
he replies. Chapter 4.
Sienna Lewis.
A gruff voice behind us calls. Chloe frowns.
Oh, it's you. Stun Gun himself. How can we help you today?
I'm the one asking the questions,
he barks.
Unless you have a problem with that, Chloe.
The officer moves his right hand near the stun gun clipped to his belt.
How do you know her name?
Nick asks.
Nicholas Logan Elliott,
highly recruited football player from Columbus, quantum physics major, 4.0 honor student. Want me to keep going?
McNulty says with a sparkle in his eyes. Although taken aback, Nick isn't one to step down.
Try me. Favorite restaurant? Hot wings and things. Childhood friend, Cardale Smith. Fear of snakes and fear of failure.
The senior officer says. He unloads his words the same way a soldier in a firing squad unloads bullets. But I think McNulty, unlike a soldier, enjoys inflicting pain.
I got more where that came from, Nick. But that just might embarrass you in front of your friends. Want me to talk about who you dated before Chloe? Your deceased older brother? Or the organization you contacted at age 16?
I wait for a comeback from this all-American running back, but instead I hear nothing. McNulty looks him over with a condescending smirk.
Didn't think so. Hey, next time how about you keep your mouth shut?
Then he turns in my direction, like a predator in pursuit of his next meal.
Ah, yes, of course, Ms. Sienna. You're even more stunning in person. Me and Kieran enjoyed reviewing some footage we found on your cortex.
He says, wiping his mouth.
You know, it's amazing what these new smart rings capture when you're not even expecting it. Next time, you might want to take it off before you freshen up after your morning run.
You're bluffing, Chloe argues. Don't listen to him. Darren tenses up, but I grab his wrist before he shifts his weight forward. Not now, I whisper under my breath. He stops and puts his foot back down. We need you. Darren turns his head and fixes onto my gaze. The energy between us ignites a spark deep within my chest. But I don't give myself permission to unpack those feelings. Even if I cared about him in that way, I'm not about to let him know. In the long run, it's far less painful to keep on pretending.
Your uncle instructed us to take you,
McNulty says.
And if we don't go? Chloe asks with an undercurrent of defiance. Will we miss out on our summer abroad?
Young lady, Swarm just murdered European dignitaries from more than 24 countries,
the officer says.
A summer abroad doesn't even matter at a time like this. How about you grow up for a second? Elixir is the only one with a potential answer, and Sienna's uncle is on the senior board. I'd shut up if I were you and do whatever he says.
She flushes with embarrassment. I'll go, I burst out, surprised by my own voice. My friends stare, their expressions convincing me they think I'm insane. I swallow hard before speaking. I don't like the idea either, but Kai told us to go with McNulty, and my uncle hasn't led us the wrong way yet. Nobody moves a muscle or speaks a word, and the longer they wait, the more my stomach turns.
She's got a point,
Darren says, breaking the silence.
Nobody's landing in London until they get this mess sorted out anyway.
I lock onto his brown eyes and push the corners of my lips upward, acknowledging his support.
All right,
Nick responds, still looking shell-shocked from the verbal spar with the senior officer. We all stare at Chloe. She shrugs. Okay, fine.
Follow me,
McNulty says. Then he takes off in the direction of the security line.
Where are we going?
Nick asks. He halts and turns his right shoulder in our direction. Beaming back at us, he says,
to the control room, of course.
Well, if you've come this far, you have just gained some major neuroplasticity. So congratulations to you. Now, I needed to end the audiobook because I basically am in contract with Audible, so I cannot put the whole audiobook out there. Otherwise, Audible would bust me and so I don't want that to happen. But if you'd like to get the rest of the book, it is free right now on Audible if you claim it as a free book. And you can do that in the show notes. It's fantastic. I mean, I get Audible. I've had it for years. And what I do is once a month, I get a credit and I can choose whatever Audible book I want. And I listen to it while I'm driving, while I'm running. So for busy people, if you are a busy person, I always say I'm intentional. I don't like the word busy, so I say I'm intentional. But I have a very heavy schedule. Why? Because I have three young kids and a fantastic wife. So here's the point. I get Audible delivered to me once a month as a credit, and then I can choose and stay up on pace with whatever's going on in the marketplace. It helps me out. And then I can keep giving value to other people, because one of the main ways, just the other day, Linda asked me, actually, one of my clients said, how do you create so much content? The way that I do is I'm constantly growing myself. So enjoy, and I wish you well as you use these four ways how to attract better clients and more of them. And don't miss out on what happens to Sienna in Elixir Project, because there's a bunch of twists. We'll talk to you later.